Good morning, everyone. Looking for a takeaway, I think it's fair to say, from the headlines that have been unfolding since yesterday and the waters off Gaza.
I'm just looking for what really happened.
Yes, indeed. Well, the events like the one yesterday off the coast of Gaza, as we've been reporting since yesterday, in which the Israeli military encountered a flotilla of aid ships bound for the Gaza Strip, and in the ensuing violence, at least 9 people were killed. Events like this illustrate at least 2 things. One, how close to the edge the Arab-Israeli conflict remains, despite being out of the headlines for months. And 2, how the paths toward peace seem to be blocked by a hardening of positions on all sides. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, in the course of explaining Israel's position on the incident, was scheduled to meet with President Obama today, and he canceled those plans after yesterday's incident.
I told him that I would have to go back to Israel. We both agreed that we'd have very close consultations right now and try to reschedule our meeting to the earliest date possible.
So no meeting in Washington between Obama and Netanyahu, but condemnations for Israel all around as both sides try to get to the bottom of what's going on, including the United Nations Security Council. We're pleased to have Peter Beinart with us. He's a professor at City University of New York, senior fellow at the New America Foundation, and author of a book out just today, The Icarus Syndrome, A History of American Hubris. Good morning, Peter.
Good morning.
First of all, your reaction to what happened yesterday. I mean, I think from my perspective, there are months and months of what appears to be no headlines and a stalemate in the peace process, and then an event like this tends to reset the deck. What do you think?
Yeah, I think what this is likely to do is to focus a lot more attention on the Gaza embargo, which has not been an issue that's gotten much discussion in the United States. And I think that's a good thing, because although I think you can debate the incident itself, and I would be inclined to say that perhaps the Israeli naval commandos didn't really have a lot of choice once they found themselves under attack on that ship. I think the larger issue is the wisdom and the morality of Israel's Gaza embargo, which I think is very, very difficult to defend. And I think, I hope that what will come out of this is more pressure on Israel to ultimately quite dramatically change the nature of the way it's treating Gaza.
But Peter Beinart, where is that pressure going to come from? You write in a piece in the New York Review of Books entitled The Failure of the American Jewish Establishment, that the constraints on Israel from the American Jewish community seem to have vanished as Israel has marched toward positions that you describe as much more extreme, involving no two-state solution and policies like expulsion of Arabs from the occupied territories, positions that are now in the government, not just extreme positions of fringe parties in the Knesset.
Well, I would hope some of the pressure would come from American Jewish organizations, and I also suspect that it will probably come to some degree from the Obama administration. Just to be clear, it's not the case that, that for instance, Avigdor Lieberman, the Israeli foreign minister, supports the expulsion of Arabs from Israel, but he does support a series of policies that are based on delegitimizing, disenfranchising, and kind of demonizing Arab Israelis, such that I think it would create a climate. It's creating a climate in which, according to polling, quite frighteningly high percentage of Israelis are open to radical solutions like actually expelling the Palestinians or expelling Arab Israelis within the Green Line.
Which is very different than the so-called radical solutions back in the 90s, which was the two-state solution, the Oslo process. You describe that seems to be off the table. American Jews aren't pushing for it. Where's the pressure going to come from?
Well, people still talk about a two-state solution. What worries me is when you continue to have settlement growth at triple the rate of the Israeli population, even this year during Netanyahu's supposed settlement freeze, and you have settlements created all around East Jerusalem such that it becomes very difficult to have a Palestinian state with a capital in East Jerusalem, then I think the prospects for a two-state solution ever really do recede. And what will come to replace that possibility are things that I think could be very, very grim. My hope is that American Jewish organizations will recognize that they admire Israel and feel solidarity towards Israel, not just because it's a Jewish state, but because it's a liberal democratic Jewish state, and that they will defend liberal democracy in Israel and stand with those people in Israel who are fighting for liberal democracy and against those who are threatening it.
Is it possible that opposition forces and even the peace activists have kind of got the Israeli government between a rock and a hard place, that perhaps they're able to take advantage of a situation in which you described that you didn't see that the Israeli commandos really had much choice if they landed on a ship and were attacked. But the government has said that there were five other ships in that flotilla, and those ships followed protocol, and then supplies were delivered. So perhaps there was a pushing the Israeli army into the corner at this point.
Yeah, that's quite possible. I mean, it seems as if the activists on that particular ship did act violently. Again, I think the Israeli commandos, once they were put on that ship and were attacked by a mob, may not have had very much choice. But I hope that we focus on the larger issue. The larger issue is that Israel has instituted an embargo against Gaza, which is much broader than simply an attempt to keep Hamas from building rockets that could fire against Israel. If you look closely at the embargo, what you see is that, in fact, it really is an effort to try to punish the Palestinian people so that they turn against the leadership of Gaza. And that's why Israel bans a whole series of products, you know, chocolate, for instance, jam, that really have nothing to do with the building of rockets. And that's the policy that I think is really misguided on Israel's behalf, and which I hope that they will be under pressure to change.
And many commentators today, even inside Israel, are suggesting that this incident will strengthen Hamas's hand inside Gaza. Referring to your book, The Icarus Syndrome, which is about a history of American hubris, your book, which is out today, where do you think Obama stands in this? Is it hubris to think that this policy can just sort of continue, that the lack of progress in Arab-Israeli peace will just sort of float, without much progress either way, and that violence won't sort of result? Or do you think that Barack Obama stands a chance of really stepping forward and coming up with a sort of Camp David-style change in the entire alignment in the Middle East?
I think Obama's challenge is that he comes into power at a time when his predecessor has actually frittered away a lot of American power. So America doesn't have as much power around the world, including in the Middle East, as we did several years ago. That said, I think Obama has rightly recognized that America's position in the Middle East is really dramatically dependent on its ability to try to show at least some progress in peace towards Israel, between Israel and the Palestinians, or at least make sure that the possibility of a two-state solution is not foreclosed,
which I think is the danger that
we might be getting to. And I think he's right to be trying to make an effort in that regard.
Well, that's certainly the test. Peter Beinart, thanks so much. Professor at City University of New York, author of The Icarus Syndrome, A History of American Hubris, released today.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.